Richard Blanco returned to a poem he wrote from the second inaugural of Barack and Me, a poem one today. It says, "And always one moon like a silent drum tapping at every rooftop and every window on every in, of every county, country." Let me start this over again. I'm getting so intimidated by being here. "And always one moon like a silent drum tapping on every rooftop and every window of one country, county, county."
The 2024 Republican presidential primary field is taking shape.
The battle lines are becoming clearer, and so is the field of candidates.
Is the odds on favorites, if you look at the polling, still Trump versus Biden?
That seems to be it, but it's just way too early to tell.
I'm more angry now, and I'm more committed now than I ever was.
Big challenge for these candidates is going to be, how do they navigate Donald Trump? And how do they navigate Ron DeSantis?
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children.
Jesus, fellas, I don't know that we can get any worse. I mean, every single episode. Every single episode, I feel like our Biden audio at the top is worse than the previous week.
Right. We were told it was a stutter. It's actually, he just can't read.
What the hell? A poem? Like, first of all, from a staff perspective, like, are you really having this president read poetry?
Yeah, that is an excellent, excellent point.
I mean, anything that's more than a syllable is going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
This dude, yikes. It's like a cognition test every time he rolls out.
Yeah.
Oh, well, welcome back to the Ruthless Friday program. A big high energy Thursday to you. We've got a bunch of really great content and fun stuff. And we have a great guest today.
We do.
The chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, Steve Daines, is with us to talk Senate races and a little hunting. And by the way, Smug, you've been heavy onto this, that we ought to go to Montana.
Yes.
I got to
tell
you, after this dude gave me his rundown of hunting and outdoors stuff, I think you're right.
100%. They got a Senate seat in play. There's a lot going on in Montana. We got to get out there. We got a lot of listeners there. 100%. We got to make this the year we get out there.
I think you're right. Hack Madness still going on. Where does all that stand, Smug?
Going strong. We're getting close to finishing the second round.
Yeah.
When folks are listening, voting should be underway for the last two brackets of the second round. Of course, you know, on my Twitter account, Comfortably Smug, you will find voting ongoing for who is the biggest hack in media. I mean, this has already been absolutely incredible.
Totally.
The upsets that you've seen, like, I mean, David French is on a spree. Taylor Lorenz, of course, you know, making her presence felt, winning like 97-3. The numbers are incredible, the number of votes that we're getting. If you haven't filled out your bracket sheet, I think it's still not too late. Hurry up, fill that up. Visit hackmadness.org. It's pretty amazing.
I mean, I'm looking at some of these matchups here, and there is beginning to be a consensus on who's going to make a deep run here.
Yeah.
Based upon early voting.
Yeah. It was already a very stacked 64, 65 teams in contention. And now it's like there's zero fat. The fat's been trimmed. These are all just all-star hacks going for it.
The best race that I see currently going is John Harwood and Sherry Jacobus.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
it's
is
close.
Sitting at 49-51 with Sherry up.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one thing you hear over and over again from the analysts is that you got to watch out for Taylor Lorenz this year. She really might do it. She's got a tough side. She's going to have to beat Jen Rubin.
Well, we know who he picked to win.
Oh, yeah. A real thumb on the scale.
I'm not gassing her on up.
I'm not saying anything. All I'm saying is what we know from Ric Flair is that to be the man, you got to beat the man. If Taylor Lorenz wants this bad enough, she is going to have to go through the queen.
Yeah, that's well, right. That everybody's got to go through the queen at some point. She's going to have to do it first. Fellas, it's Thursday, so let's do a couple of five stars to get things going. Let's go to The Voice.
Okay, this one is from Rami17362, and it's titled Punt the Turkey.
And one of the best, by the way, just the title itself. It brings me back to just the golden age of this program, when we actually didn't think we were going to do it any more than like 6 weeks, and we decided that we were just going to say anything.
I mean, Punt the Turkey is like deep lore on the program.
Yeah.
Like, you dropping that, we know you're OG.
Real ones know what about Punt the Turkey. All right.
So thank you, Rami17362, for this five-star. Rami writes, I found this podcast after seeing a post on Twitter shortly after the first Thanksgiving program. Whether it's Josh's measured takes, Smug's garbage food opinions, Duncan's dad-like demeanor, or Ashbrook's thundering Paul Harvey reads, there's something for everyone. Whenever my wife and I hear a family member's garbage liberal opinion, we look at each other and silently mouth, punt the turkey.
Yes!
This must be a strong marriage.
Oh.
What a great family. Please come to Cincinnati for a live show. Rami, we would love to do that.
Yeah.
Please come to Cincinnati for a live show. The GLTs are on me. I also have a small batch E.H. Taylor ready to open. Very fine bourbon from Buffalo Trace. P.S. Smug's voice and laugh look nothing like him.
I'm going to work on that and improving my garbage food opinions.
Work on your look, will you? Work on your look.
It's always best when the five stars chirp, because they know that, like, at our core, all we do is chirp at each other.
Bust balls.
That's the entire time.
Totally. I love that so much. And you know what? A Cincinnati thing, we need to start thinking about that.
I think we should.
Cincinnati native, you need to make some recommendations.
So. Well, there are a couple of locations that we could consider. There's a place my dad loves, and he's actually, I think, got a nameplate on the bar.
What? Your dad's got a nameplate on the bar?
Yeah, this is he's there all
Definitely
the time.
Definitely got to make a stop there.
I feel like we need to go there.
So that might be our spot, but there are a few to choose from. So we'll be looking, and we'll keep you updated.
I love it. All right, Smug, you got the next one.
This is from Owl69. Nice. Expecting a future minion. It says, my wife and I are longtime listeners who live in Annapolis, Maryland. Recently, we learned that we'll be welcoming our first child later this year.
Wow.
And there's no better way to let our conservative friends know than with a five-star review on our favorite variety program. Since we got the news, I've insisted to my wife that we abide by Smug's parenting advice and not let an iPad raise our future minion. My wife, however, thinks I should look to the actual dads on the program for parenting advice rather than their social media intern.
I think she might be right.
If you ever find yourselves in Annapolis, let us know. We'd be happy to buy you a round of beers and some Maryland crab dip. Thanks for keeping us informed and bringing some levity to current events and politics.
I love
Pat
that.
And Hill Dog in Annapolis. Thank you so much.
Who'd have guessed that Owl 69 was a procreator? I love that. Great review. Thank you. Duncan.
Ensign 1, title is On It As Always, Fellas. I just needed to share the happiest moment of my day with you all. My daughter, a 10th grader at a local high school in a blue area, just texted me to say she was listening to the program and called out your comments on Greta Thunberg. I had just mentioned this story to her last night at dinner, and it blew her mind that you guys were talking about this too. Thanks for making a positive impression on a girl who is surrounded by wokeness, but has a wide open mind and is putting the pieces together for herself.
Love it.
Excellent.
Oh, you'd love to see it. Also, as a resident of Arlington County, Virginia, it would be awesome to create some kind of secret club for us minions to hang out together.
Love that, too.
I know you're out there somewhere, minions, but when I drive around and see people still masked alone in their cars or hit the Harris Theater with all the folks in rubber gloves and face shields, I feel alone. Just a thought. Keep up the awesome work, and thanks for bringing a mother and daughter closer together through animal news, politics, and humor.
Dude, the face shields?
Yeah.
Have you encountered a face shield lately?
I have.
Really?
I have.
Mind-boggling.
Genuinely mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah. I saw one in an airport recently.
No.
Yeah.
Just full on?
Like, how do you... I don't want to be mean, but...
No, go ahead. It's ruthless, for Christ's sakes. This is what we do here.
How do you sit next to that person for 2 hours?
I just...
Without being like...
I have so many questions.
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
How do you get your pants on in the morning?
I mean, it's helpful when someone like is essentially wearing a sign that says, "Beware, I have mental health issues."
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like a caution.
It is nice. It's helpful. It is helpful.
Like a tattoo of sorts.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch out. Yeah. I'm kind of crazy.
Watch out. I'm liable to do anything. Okay. So, look, on Friday, we're going to do a special episode.
A special episode, yes. Mm-hmm. We've got Senator Lankford that'll be coming on for a Friday special. I don't know if you guys saw this on Twitter recently, but he was asking questions to Treasury Secretary Yellen.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely incredible.
Oh, I can't wait.
SVB Bank and everything. Anyway, he's going to be on a special Friday bonus episode to talk more about it.
I love that. And but in addition to all of that, what we've tried to do here at the Variety Program is figure out the best way to present some humor in the back and forth of a presidential race that is undoubtedly going to be the most entertaining thing we've ever encountered.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's going to be like a 12-month Super Bowl.
It already is. Like if you take this out of the presentation of the corporate media and you just look at it from what it is, it's already drop-dead hilarious.
Yes.
Like the back and forth and DeSantis and Trump and like some Nikki Haley stuff in there. Like all of that shit is completely hilarious.
It really is.
And they're and this like the name-calling and the just, like it is. I think we've been conditioned over the last few years to sort of like take a step back and be like, everything's insane, so we just ignore everything. Don't. Because like this is the best sitcom in going.
Yeah.
And it is what everyone is talking about.
Totally. But
like, you know, if you're watching mainstream news, they will not at all try to make jokes about it or enjoy the levity of the situation of where you have like Ronnie D talking about porn stars and then like President Trump calling him a meatball. Like, I mean, you have to enjoy it.
So on this Friday bonus episode, we're going to try a little different presentation of all that information.
Yeah.
A little bit of production, a little bit of entertainment.
Razzle dazzle.
A little razzle dazzle.
And we'll show our technical chops.
Yes.
Perhaps.
I think so.
So you're going to get some of that on Friday. But in the interim, we'll try to do some summary of where we're at on things. There's been a bunch of polls that have come out over the last few weeks. This one, Monmouth.
Some people would say Monmouth.
It seems like Monmouth.
I've always heard Monmouth.
Monmouth.
It seems like Monmouth.
Yeah, but nobody says Norfolk. They say Norfolk.
But is Monmouth like Norfolk?
And like, what's that part of Virginia? All the elites make fun of me when I McLean.
McLean.
Oh Jesus!
I'm going to say McLean forever. I don't care what the elites say.
Just makes you sound foreign. Just makes you sound foreign. Anyway, Monmouth shows Trump continuing to gain in presidential primary with Trump up 41-27, the longest long-term trend from a high-quality poll in the race. Since December, Trump has gained 15 points, while DeSantis has lost 12. That's according to Nate Cohn at the New York Times. Clearly, I think by any stretch of the imagination, what you're looking at objectively is a surge from Trump.
Yeah.
And you're looking at a decline from DeSantis in a pretty significant way. Now, granted, DeSantis is not an announced candidate, so it's, you know, sort of an apples and oranges comparison in a lot of ways. But he's been out there, he's been selling a book, and it's in the engagement back and forth over a period of weeks has happened.
My thinking right now, twofold. First, does anyone here recall a Republican presidential primary where some candidate hit 50% in an incredible poll and ended up not becoming the nominee?
What did Jeb have?
Yeah, well, look, I don't remember exactly the numbers. I mean, we can look this up, but I do remember early on in like 98, 99, George W. having a massive, massive lead in that primary. And then it closed basically because McCain did that Straight Talk Express thing that all got a ton of different, you know, the media just loved it.
The media loved it because he wasn't leading and they love fighting amongst Republicans.
Yeah, exactly. And so I remember that thing collapsing late, and I think he had a it was very substantial. Whether it was 50 or not, I don't know.
So the fact that Trump is right now sitting at 41 and already has he's gained 15 points while DeSantis has lost 12. 41, he's getting close to that 50% level. That who knows? I mean, at that, in my thinking, if I see someone hitting 50%, that's getting awfully close to already locked up. I think, you know, I don't know what DeSantis is waiting for.
I think he's waiting to get out of, he has to get out of session.
I mean, I don't see any issue with him announcing with them in session.
I'll be honest with you, Smug. I kind of agree with that. I mean, to be completely honest, I think a high water mark for DeSantis clearly is carrying the state of Florida by 20. And his speech was pitch perfect. The optics were pitch perfect. He was in prime time across the country. And you saw his poll numbers on top of everyone as a result of that. No question that was going to recede. By no, like, you don't need to do any campaigning. That's going to come down significantly. And I think now if we've gotten 30, 60, 90, 120 days removed from all of that, that's where that's going to head.
Because like there was that response where he said that thing to about Trump being like, I don't know how to pay off a porn star or whatever. So he's engaged. Like, it's obvious now. I mean, it was never really a big secret or a will he, won't he run.
Right.
But he's engaged at this point. There's no point in trying to fight with one hand behind your back or you know, just dipping your toes in the pool. You got to get all the way in and you got
to
fight.
Well, to your point earlier, I think it's just, I mean, obviously, it is way too early to say that this race is over. It's way too early to even speculate that Trump is gonna run away with it. However, I do think that this 15-point differential that he's picked up, I think it's hard earned. I think the trip to East Palestine,
huge.
I think some of the other things that he has done here over the last couple of weeks has really
going to
his
Ohio
campaign.
And looking super presidential, yep. Especially given the vacuum of where Biden essentially just didn't give a damn, and then they ended up having to just throw Mayor Pete out there to be like, someone here cares,
right?
And when he was there, you saw him reengage. So I think what the key to success for Trump would be to go back and be fun Trump. Don't be angry Trump. No one likes angry Trump. It doesn't help him. When he's fun Trump, when he's going to McDonald's, right. When he's buying, when he says, I bet I know the menu better than even you folks who work here, and the employees are cracking up. They love it.
But honestly,
Trump is dangerous.
Honestly,
he wins.
I think that's been one of his big problems in sort of in the wake of this, you know, he's still not indicted. You know, remember he was going to be indicted on Tuesday.
Oh, He was supposed to be arrested.
Yeah. But I think like the Trump campaign has lost some of that fun, and it's become more like scolding other Republicans for not defending him hard enough, which I just don't think like hits the same way with the electorate. Maybe it does for like the very hardcore Trump supporters, but it's not. It's not like what I'm like in 2016. Trump was like, I'm going to fight for you. Like I fought for myself and my businesses and I made all this money. And people are like, you know, you had candidates up there being like, you know, you're not really successful. You know, oh, Trump stakes this, that, and the other thing.
To the extent that they even criticize him. I mean, the hallmark of the 2016 campaign was like patting Donald Trump on his head
but
pretending like he wasn't a real threat.
But
I think it was very.
But the guy had a plane with his name on the side of it. Like he would go to Iowa in a helicopter. And he would take little kids on helicopter rides.
Helicopter rides.
You know what I mean? And so, like,
I mean, like, wow.
There was a fun thing about Trump 2016, which I don't think he's found yet.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
But I mean, you can't deny, you know, he's rising the polls because he's sort of running in a vacuum against a guy who hasn't really announced yet. And I think, you know, outside of just, like, it's still session in Florida, and I think he wants to complete that session because the voters had just... I think the optics are tough to just announce you're going to run for president right after people, you know, put you back in your job as governor.
I think...
But he has to... But there is a resign to run law. You know, there's different legal interpretations of it in Florida. And so I think Florida Republicans in the legislature are looking at maybe changing that.
Wait, you have to resign as governor to run for president?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. So I think it's like if you would have... There's different legal interpretations. Like if you would appear on the ballot in the same election year or whatever, they thought about changing it back when Charlie Crist was on the short list for Barack Obama.
My God.
So I think there's some of that little housekeeping stuff that they still are focused on. But I agree. I mean, like, he's basically in the primary with two hands tied behind his back. And I think for a lot of voters who, you know, after 2022, they're like, wow, this guy's really exciting and, you know, I'd vote for him. Now he's sort of like not in the conversation
right
on a daily basis like Donald Trump is, because Donald Trump's really campaigning now.
Yeah, well, look, I have long been, I've been in this business a long time, and I've always said, you've heard me say this a million times on this show, that nobody's ever won a Republican nomination surfing on somebody else's movement.
Mm-hmm.
You never have. And you have to create your own movement, and you have to make a Republican primary electorate dynamic. If you try to look at it statically,
mm-hmm.
what you look at in your current field is you look at a bunch of poll numbers that's a Trump electorate.
Yeah.
And you're never going to convince a Trump electorate for a Trump light mm-hmm. candidate. You're just not going to, because it's not Trump.
Yeah. Why get Diet Coke if you could have the real thing?
It's the real thing, right? So I think in the end, what these candidates need to do, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, whoever else runs, they're going to have to break out of this. You mentioned earlier how you had a whole bunch of people like, you're not defending Donald Trump in this potential prosecution in New York.
Right.
If you find yourself in a situation where you feel like it's imperative for you to defend Donald Trump in the context of this election cycle, you miss the fucking boat.
Right.
Right? I mean, yes, it's a political prosecution entirely. But if you're too afraid to make a case for yourself,
right,
and you have to make a case for him,
right,
you're already showing you're playing right. for second place.
Because you've just like lost, because you're just admitting the media's game of making it about Donald Trump, and then you're just really a participant to his election.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, just the optics of it don't look great if he's your opponent.
If he's your opponent. I mean, look,
is he your opponent or is he not your opponent?
You know how much I love Vivek, who right. was on the show, and I think this guy's brilliant, and he's got incredible views that should be on the main stage that I think enrich the Republican Party in a lot of ways. But I watched that thing where he comes out and he's like challenging his opponents to defend Donald Trump. And I'm like, man, that is exactly the wrong move.
He's challenging the other guys he's running against to support the other guy he's running against.
Yeah. And it's like,
which is just wild logic.
You have to make your own way. I mean, like, I think Trump himself is a great example of this when he ran that 2016 primary.
Exactly.
Thinking of the primary electorate in a dynamic fashion of like, I can create something. I can create a movement. I can create a base of support. And not like, I think hopefully we've moved on past the thinking of there are strict lanes. There's, okay, right. you've got the evangelical lane or you've got the foreign policy lane.
That is a creation of the media.
Totally. And so, you know, going out there, creating your own movement, your own base is going to be key to this whole thing. And like, if any candidate, whether it's DeSantis or somebody, tries running as, okay, I am on Trump's policies, I am like Trump, vote for me.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, I remember when everybody stood on stage in 2015, every single candidate to a man, except for Trump, said, I'm a Reagan Republican, I'm carrying on the Reagan legacy. I am Reagan. It's just like,
and then it was like, spends too much, taxes too much, borrows too much. It was like all the talking points of the Tea Party era.
Waste, fraud, and abuse.
Right. Waste, fraud, and abuse. If I hear waste, fraud, and abuse from another politician, I'm going to strangle them with my bare hands. You know what I mean? It was the trite, poll-tested nonsense. And he was the only guy on stage who wasn't doing that. It would be as if Donald Trump got on stage and was like, I really think that Ted Cruz did a great thing by shutting down the government to protest Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
To fight waste, fraud, and abuse.
Of course he never did. Because if you looked at the polls, you would say primary voters approved of that. But he didn't. He just didn't deal with it.
He was doing his own thing.
He just did his own thing.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He went into South Carolina. He said, you know what? The Iraq war was a mistake.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, he's definitely going to lose now.
Now he's going to lose.
And I was like,
and then he won.
And then he won by a lot.
Right.
So, like, that's the lasting lesson that we're looking at from all of this stuff. But in the meantime, you got all this theatrics taking place. You got a bunch of big donors out there. Like, look, this comes from Puck News. So, I don't know. Most of you are listening to this. You don't know what Puck News is. There is some talent over there. But they also have this, like, amazing ability to just create complete fiction. And what they're saying is Reid Hoffman, who's a dedicated Democratic donor, is going to back DeSantis – because they think that Trump is an existential threat to democracy. There's zero evidence of this, by the way, and nowhere in the article does it quote anybody named Reid Hoffman.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's interesting,
right?
I think that's a really good lesson, because there's going to be so many insane, you know, articles through this primary season. If it's not a direct quote, this is just random gossip
noise
that someone has decided is journalism.
Noise, yeah. Right?
No, and you know, one other phenomenon I think that we can expect here is that the media really wants Trump to be the Republican nominee, because Trump sells newspapers.
Well, they all went out of business after he left.
Yeah, they all want him to be the Republican nominee. So if you see mainstream media cheerleading for Donald Trump, don't misinterpret that as, oh, well, maybe they're being fair again. No, 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 no. They think, A, Donald Trump's name and them dunking on him on a routine basis helps their bottom line. And they also think, B, that Donald Trump is the nominee probably helps their favorite Democratic candidate.
Well, I think also they just love, you know, it's like, why do people go to a monster truck derby? Like, for the crashes.
Yeah.
You know, like, the media for sure wants Republicans to be beating up on other Republicans. It's cannon fodder for the meme war.
Why put Tom Cruise on the cover of a tabloid?
Yeah.
Right? Because it sells fucking tabloids. Right. That's why.
Right.
So, that, I mean, that's part of it. Here's another one from The Guardian. Trump likes the optics of handcuffs. Donald Trump has told advisors that he wants to be handcuffed when he makes an appearance in court if he's indicted by the Manhattan grand jury for his role in paying hush money to adult film star Stormy Daniels, multiple sources close to the former president have said. Do you buy that?
I don't. So there was no direct quote.
No.
Multiple
sources have said.
My thinking on this is, we know, and I agree with Trump on this for sure, he's a germaphobe. I would not want handcuffs, because literally it's just on, in theory, the hands of criminals all day long, you know?
You don't think they do? That's a good question. Do they disinfect the
handcuffs? I don't think that thing is sitting in, you know, disinfected all night, and then everyone goes and picks up their handcuffs in the morning. Like, all right, everyone make sure that, like...
make sure these criminals are clean.
The, like, dude covered in heroin from last night doesn't have his heroin all over the handcuff.
So you think they just reuse the handcuff?
Dude, probably. Cops are busy enough without having to disinfect the handcuffs. So I think Trump knows this and is like, I don't want handcuffs on me.
See, I have
that are just taken off of some like random.
That's a hilarious take.
Being a germaphobe is one thing, but the other thing that we know about Donald Trump is that he is P.T. Barnum reincarnated.
Yeah.
He is one of the greatest showmen.
No one knows drama or theater better than him.
One of the greatest showmen of our time, and he knows that this image will be powerful and lasting. And I would believe that this is something.
This guy was in television.
He
was on The Apprentice. Like, I think he understands the power of visual images to captivate people and re-engage his base. Like, I think if your Trump voter saw Donald Trump in handcuffs on what is very clearly a political prosecution of something that happened years and years and years and years ago, his poll numbers would go up.
I have a buddy who's... A major donor, gave a lot to Trump, and had dinner with Trump and told me this very fascinating story of something that President Trump brought up to him in the context of how he soaked up all the attention. Like, CNN would play his rallies from start to finish, 2015, 2016. He was must-see TV. He dominated the airwaves. And he said Trump told him that, like, when he was giving those speeches at rallies, he was always watching the news cameras in the back. He said they have a little red light on there.
You can tell when you're going live.
You know it's live. And he was like, I will say anything and get this crowd entertained and rocking to make sure that red light keeps blinking. Because if it's cut off,
that's right. But you know, but he hasn't seen the red light in quite some time. Just being honest. Like,
no, he's right.
They're not carrying things live right now.
Yeah, maybe that changes. Maybe if these poll numbers change, maybe that changes.
I mean, if CNN actually wanted to be a profitable business again.
Well, you never know. I mean, certainly it's not working
and
out.
And that's what we were just saying. Like, these newspapers, these media organizations know just the word Trump gets eyeballs, whether it's in their headlines, whether it's in the video coverage they have. Just Trump alone gets eyeballs.
Not totally. So we mentioned that the initial interaction between DeSantis and Trump on the Stormy Daniels thing, where DeSantis essentially said, look, I don't know what it takes to pay hush money for a porn star. Well, he doubled down on that. And this is according to Axios. Hours after igniting outrage in Trump world with a shot at Trump over the former president's alleged affair with a porn star, Stormy Daniels, DeSantis told Morgan that an underlying conduct in the Manhattan DA's investigation is, quote, outside of my wheelhouse. At the end of the day, as a leader, you really want to look to people like our founding fathers, DeSantis said when asked, when Morgan asked whether personal conduct in a leader matters. Quote, it's saying that you don't ever make a mistake. It's not saying that you don't ever make a mistake in your personal life, but I think what type of character you are bringing. Interesting, right? I mean, it's like he's like kind of doubling in there in a way that has not happened up to this point. He's probably looking at the same thing we are in terms of these poll numbers. It feels like he's going to have to draw some contrast.
Well, I mean, Trump attacks him every day.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, you know, turnabout is fair play. If the guy's going to call him a meatball and a globalist rhino cuck, you know, acolyte of Paul Ryan who wants to kill your grandmother, which literally is what Donald Trump's saying.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he's got to punch back.
And meatball's the hardest hitting of all those.
It is. He blew past it. I said, or read something and said he's not going to use it.
Yeah, like he's still. I read an article that said that he's still workshopping what the nickname is going to be.
He didn't like meatball. I felt like that hit like a freight train.
Yeah, meatball. I didn't think there was any problem with meatball. It
worked. I mean, that would ring your bell.
Everyone started talking about it.
But like,
everyone started saying meatball.
What we never really nailed down, because Trump never really explained it, was like, what was meatball was kind of like a. What was the ink blot thing?
It was anti-Italian bigotry.
Oh, a Rorschach test.
It's like you call meatball and it's like you're not sure if you're making fun of him being Italian or if you're saying he's pudgy or if you're saying like he's like a meatball, like dumb.
Mm-hmm. But
like,
that's the beauty of Trump, right? Is that he's got those sort of Rorschach tests that all of his critics assume is one thing.
Right.
When it could be like the other
thing. I think meatball's stronger than De Sanctimonious.
I don't think the sanctimonious works because sanctimonious in and of itself is like, what are you?
It's
really
way
saying?
Too many syllables.
It's too much.
You just call someone meatball.
It doesn't work. But like here's, I mean, DeSantis
really paints the picture for you.
DeSantis isn't looking so much like a meatball anymore. This guy's getting trim. He's getting in fighting shape.
Maybe
I don't know if you've noticed.
Maybe he's got to start calling him Linguini.
Oh my God. Here we go.
I volunteer the Italian people.
once again, our profuse apologies to the Italian community. So Trump campaign prepares for a quote unquote new normal running under indictment. This is according to the Washington Post. Here's what I think is funny before I even read this. Mm-hmm. Trump is the one that surfaced all this shit. We have not heard a single thing from a DA in Manhattan. We've not heard a single thing from an authority anywhere in the Justice Department, anywhere that this guy is in any legal trouble whatsoever. He just surfaced that he was going to be arrested on Tuesday. And like all week, it's been a piece after piece about indictment of Trump and what an arrested Trump looks like. And like it's Thursday.
Yeah, right.
He's not arrested.
Reporters have spent the week breathlessly asking Republicans to respond. What do you think about Trump's arrest? And everybody's like, wait, he wasn't arrested.
Yeah. There was some news the other day about like the grand jury in New York was like paused.
Well, they didn't even meet going on. Yesterday. They were supposed to meet and they didn't meet. But we don't even know if they were meeting on this. Like the grand juries deal with a whole host of things. And like we don't even know if there is literally zero credible information on this entire
thing. It's so powerful that he can be like, they're going to arrest me.
And then, boom, total
takeover.
And control the soup to nuts English-speaking media for a week pontificating on what an indicted Trump looks like.
It's incredible.
It really is incredible.
So, it's so tough to run against.
Yeah.
Because again, it's like, okay, you could have 100 million in a super PAC and just fire it all out on ads, buying millions of points on TV, and still this guy could drop something like that airwaves are all his.
Done.
It's incredible.
It's done. So the former president's campaign isn't waiting for an official indictment or arrest to deploy an aggressive political response, already criticizing New York District Attorney Alvin Bragg and key witness Michael Cohen as Trump aides plot further attacks. Advisors are moving to capitalize on coverage in conservative media outlets, raising over $1.5 million since Saturday, a person familiar with the matter said. So, I mean, look, you're already understanding what this is about, right? I mean, I don't know if he's going to be arrested or not, but, like, clearly they think it's to their political advantage, or they wouldn't have done it.
No, no, that's right. And, I mean, this is, honestly, dude, this is back to the P.T. Barnum point, because he knows maybe something's coming. We don't know if something's coming. Maybe something's coming, and he's going to get out in front of it, and he's going to frame it the way he wants. And the lights are not on in front of the crowds. The crowds are not as big anymore, so he has to get creative in how he's operating. And so he's doing a little bit of a Crazy Ivan move. And if you've ever seen the movie Hunt for Red October, great scene in the Hunt for Red October when they head straight for the torpedo.
Yep.
And they knew that the torpedo would not arm itself in time and that it would break up on the bow of that submarine.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what Trump is doing. It's a Crazy Ivan move.
It's a Crazy Ivan, no question about it. So here's an interesting aspect of this week, guys, that I think has been underplayed. Nikki Haley, this is according to The Hill, Haley knocks DeSantis on Ukraine. Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley said Monday that the U.S. can't ignore Ukraine to focus on China as Kiev fends off Russian aggression, since Moscow winning the war would benefit Beijing. Haley's comments come after Florida Governor Ron DeSantis called Russia's year-long war on Ukraine a quote-unquote territorial dispute, and said that a war should not be one of Americans' vital national interests, remarks that have drawn blowback. Here's what's so fascinating about this. Again, going back to our previous discussion about whether you look at this as static poll numbers or dynamic poll numbers, what Nikki Haley has decided, and I think you could tell when she was here in her interview, is that Nikki Haley is going to be Nikki Haley.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't give a shit what the poll numbers say. She thinks that she can make the case to move the poll numbers.
And that's the funny thing is you look at the Monmouth numbers that we just referenced earlier this episode. Other than Trump and DeSantis, she's basically the only candidate who has any sort of a following.
Yeah. But stuff like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that style is what served Trump so well in 2015 and 2016. Not caring what the establishment's point of view was or what their messaging was on any particular issue. You have something you're going to say, and you say it, damn everything else. And, like, we know from history there's room for that in a Republican primary.
But she's also now drawn contrast with the top two candidates in the race, right? This is likely to be at least a 6-7-person field. And you know, at the leanest, Ukraine, non-Ukraine, with a Republican primary, it's a 70-30 proposition, you know, at the leanest. If 30% of this Republican electorate somehow aligns themselves with Nikki Haley, you got yourself a nominee.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's not going to be over that issue. I'm just saying the fact that she's authentically staked it out is a huge contrast to what we saw all of the mistakes made in 2016 of people trying to lay on top of whatever they thought was popular and basically apologize and just say, like, the rest of these guys, I'm all good with all of these guys, and we all have the same position.
Completely unapologetic, unconflicted about our point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. And we mentioned the Ramaswamy thing, right, where he was also attacking DeSantis and defending Trump. Again, if you were having a conversation about Donald Trump, you're not going to get Donald Trump's voters. It's not like somebody's like, oh, you defended Trump so nicely that I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump. Like, I mean, I don't know. This is the consultant class at its absolute worst.
Yeah.
And this is where you see voters get gypped out of real debates all the time, because you look at the consultant class and they're like, well, here, the poll numbers say X, so let's just do X. And we'll just lay on top of that issue. We won't try to make an authentic case. Whatever you believe doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're ultimately just going to lay on top of it and make sure it's not a liability. That's what the consultant class
and it's such
said.
Conventional thinking that's actually doing a tremendous disservice to a candidate.
It is, because if a guy like Vivek, who has not spent a day in elected politics and not spent a moment in this industry whatsoever, isn't the guy who's looking at us being like, what the fuck are you guys doing? The fact that we're in Ukraine in the first place is entirely all of your fault for creating policies that have put us in this situation.
Right.
If he's not doing that, who is?
I mean, and the timing is really great that Nikki used here, because you just got news reports that she flew, not she herself, XI, President Xi of China, just flew to Moscow.
Yeah.
And they're further integrating their work in terms of like weapons and
supply. Yeah, that alliance is so real right now. It's ridiculous.
And it's 100% because of Biden. Like, the weakness that the world saw with the disaster of what he did in Afghanistan, and how, I mean, China flew a spy balloon across the country.
Yeah.
The world knows Biden is weak. And so not seeing this as an opportunity to highlight that, I mean, you're just doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Vivek's line here, I mean, it could have been repeated by any number of run-of-the-mill House Republicans. It's sort of in anathema to what he's running on, which is, look, I'm here to say what I think. I'm here to say what it is I believe. I'm not trying to, like, run as a career politician. I'm running for the top job. If I wanted to run as a career politician, I would have started at a lower job. And that's a very attractive message. But then when you're using some talking points that sound like they're coming from a guy that's running for a lower job, everybody's like, why, you know. So it's a little, I think he loses a little off of his authenticity here. The guy is obviously an incredibly brilliant businessman. He built something huge. His dad didn't give him a $1 billion start. I really think that he needs to stick with his guns.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I hope that as more candidates get in, they stick to that. You guys want some animal news?
Always.
All right, so minions have been all over this. This is according to ABC. Mountain lion attacks man from behind while he and his wife relaxed in the hot tub.
Wow.
Horrible situation.
A man was attacked from behind by a mountain lion and suffered wounds to his head while he and his wife were relaxing in an in-ground hot tub. The incident occurred at approximately 10 p.m. Saturday night, when the couple alerted Colorado Parks and Wildlife that the man had been attacked by the mountain lion while they were in the hot tub in a rented home in a heavily wooded area just miles west of Nathrop, Colorado, along Chalk Creek in Chaffee Country.
What a coward. What a coward that he would come up behind him and try to... Well, the guy's just trying to have a relaxing night with his wife in a hot tub, and you're gonna attack him from behind. No warning. What a coward.
And mountain lions are...
Coward mountain lion.
They're serious animals. It's not like he relies on just trying to take out some boomer in a hot tub. Like, he could go get a deer or something.
Right. mountain lions are brown they're demons. They will kill you if they have a chance.
Demons. I mean, I think that means you have to be armed.
You got to be armed at every, especially if you're out in the woods in Colorado and it's in a remote area. Like, if a mountain lion comes up on you like that, it should be a rug on your floor or something.
Have you guys seen that video of the mountain lion that's stalking the guy?
Yes.
And he's got the gun out.
Yes.
And the thing is walking towards him, and he's just holding the gun, pointing at it, and then it ultimately, like, makes a move on him and, like, comes at him.
Yeah.
And then, like, backs off a little bit, and then he shoots it.
Right, dumb.
Like, why aren't you unloading the fucking clip the moment that thing shows up?
I mean, I think that this is the lesson here, is if you are in any way in proximity to nature, be armed. Be armed. It doesn't matter if you're in a hot tub. Stay strapped. Keep it right by the wires, right next to your beer. Right next to your beer. Get something that could take down a bear or a mountain lion.
They could
it on hand.
They could have also just left something out. Like, they could have gone out into the woods around their house. They could have killed a rabbit and skinned it and put it near.
You can't do that.
Or this is the case for a dog. If you have a pet dog,
you
know, the mountain lion is going to have to deal with the dog first.
You're going
to
give him a home-cooked meal. Yeah. Right in the vicinity of where you live, he's going to be stalking
He'll
the area.
Come back
I'm
every
saying
night.
It's, I'm agree. Saying it, the second that
That's it, why you can't give this, cats milk. They'll this, show up every day.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Swiss Family Robinson? Where they dig the pits and the tigers fall into the pits because they go after the bait?
Is that where you got the monkey pool idea?
It's a great idea.
Swiss Family Robinson?
It's a great
idea.
You learn a lot of things from watching movies. My point is...
So now you're giving it dinner and its own hot tub.
No, dude. It's called bait. The second it touches the skinned rabbit bait, a bell rings.
There we go.
And you know to turn around with your gun, knock it off. You finish your night. you have a nice time with your wife in the hot tub, and when you're done, you go out, you skin the animal, you put its rug.
I mean,
on the
it could be kind of a power move if you do this as like a pre-dinner thing and like impress the wife with like
Dinner and a show.
Bingo. So she'll be like, yeah, we'll have a nice little soak before dinner. She's like, what's on the menu? It's a surprise. We're going to see who shows up for the rabbit.
Honey, would you like to turn in and watch Swiss Family Robinson?
Dude, if I could hunt from a hot tub, I'd be a happy man.
Oh, that,
I mean, that is
so
living the dream.
That is living the dream.
If anybody's done that, write in. I need to hear about that. I need to hear about that. All right, so we're going to breeze through this section pretty quickly. This is how press covers the libs. You guys want to hear some of these headlines?
Oh, man.
Just incredible. Pentagon prepares for its next battle, GOP accusations of wokeness.
Oh, no. They haven't won a battle in a while, so.
Ooh. Ooh.
My God.
Wow. That is a devastating take.
Well, look, I'm just saying.
I mean, you're pretty weak on terror anyway, so
well,
I do
they're reading that. White fragility in the Pentagon right now. I'm not going to defend them.
Okay. It gets worse. Right here, this is from Fox News. It says, Pentagon doctors claim 7-year-olds can make decisions to be injected with hormones, puberty suppressants.
What, I mean,
why is the Pentagon weighing in on that?
Bingo, that's the number one.
You sicko, you're going to defend the Pentagon.
Now I'm all with you now.
Now you're with me.
You turn me.
That is not an attack on our troops. That is an attack on the Pentagon.
That's the huge problem that we have right now is we've got institutions weighing in on stupid bullshit. The Pentagon, you have one mission. Kill our enemies. Fucking slaughter
wild.
The opponents of America.
Right.
Focus on a singular thing and keeping our troops safe. You know?
Yes.
Don't worry about giving 7-year-olds puberty suppressants. Worry about how do we make sure that our war fighters on the battlefield survive being shot. Figure out more solutions for that. Less about who should get hormones.
I want to just read you a couple paragraphs from this Politico story about the Pentagon. When top Pentagon leaders face lawmakers this week to defend their budget proposal, they expect a small but vocal minority of Republicans to hammer them with accusations that military leadership has weakened the armed forces by imposing woke policies on troops. This is written in a news article, this next sentence. I want you guys to think about this. So DOD leaders plan to show up armed with what they believe to be a winning strategy. Facts.
Oh my God. This is a straight news article.
They're like, listen, if you disagree with giving 7-year-olds hormones, we can defeat your argument with facts.
So do you want to get into the pouncing and seizing? There's plenty of that too.
Hell yeah.
So the Hill, Republicans seize on transgender rights ahead of 2024. Republicans have seized on transgender rights ahead of 2024.
Transgender rights.
Right.
Like the whole thing is written as a press release. Okay, I'm sorry. Keep going.
But the thing is, the wording is very key, Ashbrook. It's the same way that these bastards have turned abortion into women's health care.
Yeah.
It's just like, keep reading. I just like this.
You did. I feel like he's demoralized.
You broke him.
Broke
poor Ashbrook.
It even goes past even women's health care. It has to be birthing person's health care.
Right.
You know?
Oh my God! No, you're right. The English language. First of all, I mean, let's not even get into the pronouns. But they just destroyed the English language with that. It's a conversation for another day.
They hate the dictionary.
But like, how in the world are you supposed to learn English if this is your second language and we're changing the?
Can you imagine
plurals into singulars?
Can you imagine English second language?
Bro,
now you don't have
like
it
right now. It's like, bro, what are you talking about?
Like, dude? imagine being like an immigrant to this country and learning the English language and trying to integrate into society so you can be successful. Like, you need a new dictionary every 6 months.
No, dude,
like
poor people.
Day one, they call you Latinx, and they get mad when you punch the guy.
Exactly. Congratulations, you've navigated cartels and you've paid off every dime your family ever had to make it to the Texas border. You're now Latinx.
That's your victory.
And people are like, huh?
Can you imagine?
Como?
Exactly. It's the most outrageous thing.
Yeah, totally. All right. So Republicans have seized on transgender rights ahead of 2024 with policy proposals including punishing doctors who treat transgender youths to barring transgender women and girls from playing sports and teams with their peers. Dude. Just think about this sentence. Let's just pontificate on this sentence for a second. Seized upon. That's well trodden ground. We know the seizing. We understand the pouncing and the seizing. Punishing doctors who treat transgender youth. So what they're talking about is people like DeSantis who think that it is inappropriate for doctors to have puberty blockers on preteens.
And beyond that, I want
to say,
or younger.
One very, you know, very strong thing that DeSantis has done that I really support is, you know, the media came after him saying that, like, oh, you're trying to attack transgender children and doctors who are providing care. And they unflinchingly put out this video of what that, you know, quote, care entails, where they showed children who've had their forearms harvested for flesh. For gender reassignment surgeries, and dude, will always have their arms in that fashion, because at the age of 6 or 7, they were allowed to do this, and it was determined to be care. And I think that's the approach to this, because you've got a media who describes things like that as doctors who treat transgender youths. That's what we're up against, and that's why you have to put it right in their face.
It's just unbelievable. But I mean, look, you have to suspend everything about not just American culture, Western culture, but any culture. When we have said for millennia that it is inappropriate for adults to have sexual relations with kids, clearly. Mm. Part of that is that kids can't understand sexuality, clearly. And like the idea that somebody, A, needs to be educating my children on sexuality as children infuriates me beyond belief. But secondarily, the idea that they can stand on their own and say, I am the following by themselves without any sort of parental overview on that, or worse yet, parental encouragement on that, or when they make life-changing decisions, somehow this is the controversial opinion that we think that perhaps that's not appropriate for a 9-year-old to do?
Right.
That's controversial?
Right, and then all of a sudden, here's this 6'4", 210-pound person who is competing in the 200-meter dash against your high school daughter.
It's your 5'2 daughter.
You're not allowed to ask a question about it.
No,
you're not even allowed to wonder whether that's something that's
fair.
You're a
bigot. You're a bigot, and you're not understanding things. I just, it is, we are so far beyond the pale when we've got corporate media in the space where they frame articles like that.
Mm.
It's just unbelievable. All right, let's lighten things up. We got to go to a game or I'm going to frickin' my head's going to pop off.
We got to do it. And, you know, we're not playing King of the Hill because of Hack Madness.
Yes.
Right.
Many of our great champions are still in the tournament. Unfortunately, that means we can't play our signature game. But what we can play is a newer game on the show.
I love this game.
Mad Libs.
Yes.
Excellent.
Let's hit that music.
Mad, 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 madly mad, 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 madly mad, mad, mad.
Mad, 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 so very mad. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Mad, 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 madly mad, 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 madly mad, mad, mad,
libs.
Oh, man.
I forgot how good the song is.
Great song. Good tune.
It really is. Every one of our game songs are just top notch.
Yeah, well, we sing, we dance, we entertain.
That's what we do.
That's why it's a variety program.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, so for our new listeners, Mad Libs is I'm going to read a series of tweets where I'm going to leave out a phrase or a word, and Ashbrook and Holmes and Smug have to guess, it's multiple choice, what the word is that I left out. These are just great. The first one is from Erica Marsh. Have you seen this account on Twitter? Hundreds of thousands of followers. It's like one of those Dem resistance accounts. She tweets, Joe Biden is the blank of this generation.
What?
This should be good.
A, Mr. Rogers. B, Michael Jordan. C, Barack Obama.
Oh, my God.
D, FDR.
Okay. Oh.
Remember, we're going to go, you know, clockwise here around the room.
Okay.
What's C again?
Barack Obama.
Oh, my God. I mean, first of all,
I would hope for that. I would hope for that answer.
That would be the most hysterically
insane. Because we're time traveling. We're not going back in time.
Hell yeah.
And part of the thing on this is trying to figure out the judge and the jury, right? So, like, logic would tell you, in the way that the Ron Klain-led White House tried to frame Joe Biden, is that he was trying to be the FDR.
Yeah.
Right? So logic would tell you the FDR is what they've said because they're following the talking points. Knowing the judge and the jury, I just can't believe that he would make it that easy on us.
Mm.
And the rest of this is just unbelievable. The Michael Jordan, I mean, I can't even wrap my mind around that. The Barack Obama being 20 years his junior is pretty hard to wrap my mind around. And Mr. Rogers, I think, is where I'm going to land.
Okay.
Hey.
So I tried to think of what would be the most offensive choice, and that's Michael Jordan, B.
Ashbrook?
Are we allowed to ask the date of the tweet?
It is from Wednesday.
Okay, I'm going to say Mr. Rogers as well, because I think that's the sort of thing that would stick out to people. They would be like, wait, why in the world would they say Mr. Rogers about Joe Biden? Because how is he even Mr. Rogers? And I think that's
great logic.
That would catch
the great logic is there is no logic, which is actually the best logic when you're trying to interpret this.
Yeah, what do we got?
It is in fact FDR.
No.
Yeah.
See, he did. I was trying to give you
switcheroo. Wow. I psyoped you guys.
Reverse switcheroo.
Full head actually, fake.
You psyoped yourselves. Really
incredible.
Look what you've done. The old man. He's very difficult.
I'm tricky. I'm tricky.
Man, you are trickster.
The second one is from Scott Dworkin. This is
this guy.
He's a real idiot. International disgrace. Rand Paul calls on D.A. Bragg to be arrested. What a frickin' joke. Randy should be sharing a cell with Donald.
Oh.
Blank loving traitor.
Mm. Oh, I got it.
I bet I could guess.
A. Putin. Mm. B. Trump. C. MAGA. D. Fascist. Is he a Putin-loving traitor, a Trump-loving traitor, a MAGA-loving traitor, or a fascist-loving traitor?
You up first on this one?
I think it's got to be Putin. Like, that is always the first defense of a lib is, oh, if you don't agree with me, you must be with Vladimir Putin.
Smash?
I'm going to say fascist. The left just overuses that word ad nauseum, and I'm going to just try to differentiate here.
Okay. I feel like I like where his head's at. But I don't feel like fascist loving fits with the vernacular of the left. I think you're either a fascist or you're not. And of course, he thinks he's a fascist. So loving doesn't work for me.
Okay.
The Trump loving is intriguing to me. But I ultimately agree with Smug. It's got to be Putin.
It is, in fact, Putin.
Yeah.
They have only one thing. Holmes,
1 point for Smug. Final third round here. This is again from Erica Marsh. I mean, you gotta check her out,
dude. This
Erica Report.
You've fallen in love with this account.
The reason why is this account has posted. It posted on Tuesday in the morning. I just gotta read this series of tweets. Good morning. Today is the day. I've never been so excited because you know Trump was going to be arrested.
Yeah.
Then her next tweet on the
subject.
By the
way, the irony of her taking Trump's word on his arrest.
It's hilarious. Her next tweet on the topic was, unfortunately, it looks like today won't be the day that Donald Trump will be indicted. The grand jury in New York City will meet tomorrow to vote on indicting him. One more day.
No such luck, Erica.
Third tweet. Who is excited for Donald Trump to be indicted today from Wednesday? The next tweet on the subject. This is BS. Trump was supposed to be indicted today. So, yes, I've fallen in love with this account. It is fantastic.
Okay.
Okay, so third round here. Tucker Carlson is a modern day blank.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
Ooh.
A, David Duke. B, Joseph Goebbels. C, Father Coughlin, D, Rush Limbaugh.
Ooh. Boy, this is a tough one. This is a tough one. I think Ashbrook's got a lead here.
Yeah. Lunatic lefties love to throw out the name Goebbels without any actual concept of how terrible that person was, and they apply it where it is so inappropriate on a routine basis. And therefore, I think that this lunatic is probably using the name Goebbels.
Okay.
Okay. I don't disagree with that logic. I think that's pretty good logic. I feel like the David Duke thing is a little simplistic.
Hmm. Well, she's not a member of Mensa.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. There is not a Mensa associate here.
No.
And she's clearly not paying a compliment to Rush Limbaugh. I think that if she's trying to be, I don't know enough about this lady, but if she's trying to be intellectual in her insanity, then I would say Father Coughlin.
Okay.
C.
I'm going to go with B. I think anytime a lib is mad, they've got two things. Either tie it to Putin or say they're a Nazi.
Ladies and gentlemen, Smug is our champion. It is B. Joseph Goebbels.
Huge.
I did, you know, I put in the Father Coughlin in there. I knew someone would take the bait.
Well,
because there's an intellectual.
But I didn't know her, you know.
You don't know how dumb she is.
Yeah, no.
You got to do a little more research.
She's real dumb.
Real dumb.
I mean,
real
the judge
dumb.
And jury is extremely dangerous in here. He pulled off a reverse switcheroo.
Yeah.
Anything could happen.
A double, and I fell for both of them. That son of a bitch. Unbelievable. Okay, well, we did it, fellas. That's the game of the day. What we need to do is one more segment here before we get to our interview, because I have to get to this. It's a TikTok deal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this is the headline that caught my eye. And my ears like get red, and I begin to sort of like sweat when I see shit like this. Axios: TikTok's popularity complicates possible U.S. ban.
Oh, man. Oh no.
Such a terrible, terrible approach.
Well, hold on. Just think about this. Okay. Let's just speculate on what we already know, that it is a data mining state-run operation from the Chinese government to try to gather intelligence and information on America's youth. We know that. That's a fact. It also is a propaganda outlet for which our America's youth is served a steady diet of pro-CCP propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Knowing those two things and then coming to the conclusion, but it's just so popular with the kids, we can't get rid of it.
It's like, among users, fentanyl is very popular.
Yeah.
Right. Both enrich China.
No, I mean, it's like, fentanyl, look, the kids love this stuff.
It's popular, folks.
We can't ban Molly. The kids love the stuff.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
You know, hardcore porn amongst the teens, real popular.
It's incredible that, like, and this is a media organization. You know, in theory, they're supposed to be bringing us the news. You always see it becomes a footnote if it's mentioned at all. The fact that, yes, this is an entity that's controlled by the Chinese government. On numerous occasions, we've seen proof that it is spying on the individuals who install this on their phones.
Well, so here's the related story, right? In the Wall Street Journal yesterday, more than two dozen state governments have placed web tracking code made by TikTok parent ByteDance and official websites.
On official websites.
On official websites, according to a new report from a cybersecurity company. What that means is that TikTok in and of itself has put code embedded into state and federal government websites. Why would they do something like that? Oh, I don't know, Maybe it's because they're a state-owned and operated. Maybe it's the same folks that stole, I don't know, roughly 10 million security clearances.
And personnel records.
And personnel records from the Office of Management and Budget.
That's the thing. If this was an app with just like, hey, it's a fun little dance app, there's no need to try to install tracking code on government websites. It's crystal clear the reason for this. It's a Trojan horse, is
what
it is.
But Smug, the kids love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. You can't do anything about
it. The kids love it.
They're trying to infiltrate our government.
Well, they can use, spy on us. They can use those pixels, those digital trackers, to basically capture your information about your browser and your computer or your phone or whatever, and information about you, and then serve you ads and stuff. And like, what would the Chinese government want to serve ads to America's youth about?
Why would they want that?
Wouldn't it be great things?
Why would they want that? But you know what? We can't do anything about that because our daughter's dancing in short shorts.
Right.
Too important. It's
right.
Popular.
Right.
It's popular. People love that stuff. Oh my God, it makes me absolutely sick. Anyway, let's get to our interview. This is the great senator from the state of Montana, Steve Daines. Okay, we're going to talk some politics here, and there's nobody on the planet that we'd rather talk politics with right now than the chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, Senator Steve Daines. How are you, sir?
I am doing great. Glad to join you.
Oh, man, listen, we're so excited about this. I can't believe we haven't actually done a Ruthless program with you before because we feel like we know so well. But now, you know, you're like in the thick of things, getting started here on a very, very important cycle for Senate Republicans.
Well, I think every time you go to a Republican event since I've been in Washington, which is now hard to believe, now it's been 10 years, Josh. I mean, it was 2 years in the House. I'm now 8 years in the Senate. I used to be one of the guys coming in here who was a new guy. Now I'm considered kind of some part of somebody's got experience. But I tell you, this really is for all the marbles this next election in 2024.
Yeah.
We have got to give whoever the new Republican president is in January of 25 when they're sworn to office, the single most important thing we can give that new Republican president is a Republican U.S. Senate. And it's within our grasp with this map. We'll talk more about it. But if we fell short like we saw happen in 22, imagine for a moment the new president sworn in, and you know the first few things of order is to get some of the key cabinet positions filled. If that Secretary of State, Secretary of Treasury, I mean, these are critically important roles for the operating of the federal government. And imagine having to go to Chuck Schumer to negotiate every one of those nominees. That is possible if we don't give our new Republican president a Republican majority, because as you know, in the Senate, we're uniquely in the personnel business. The House doesn't do this. This is something the founding fathers gave to us. So there's a lot of reasons to talk about why the majority is important, but I'll just start there. In the personnel department, the new president would not be able to put their staff in place without Chuck Schumer's blessing. That's a chilling thought.
Okay, well, before we get too far into this interview, Senator, I'd really like to raise a very serious issue, and it has to do with that now famous photo that resulted in a temporary suspension of your Twitter account. And of course, I'm referring to that picture of you and your wife and the giant, beautiful pronghorn antelope. And as we understand it, this was actually your wife's trophy, so she must be quite the hunter.
I'll tell you what, she's a great hunter. The family that hunts stuff and kill stuff together stays together. So we say. And it's been a family tradition for the Daineses since I was a kid growing up in Montana. My grandpa Daines, by the way, my grandpa Daines was a diehard Democrat. When he'd take me fly fishing and hunting when I was a kid, if Richard Nixon came on the radio, he taught me words that sailors had not yet invented. When I came home for spending time with Grandpa Daines, my mom had to kind of say, now, Steve, where did you hear that? Well, I heard that from Grandpa Daines anyway, but just got to get some perspective on this. But this has been in my blood since I was a kid. And so we've passed this tradition down to our children. We've hunted as a family. We're now empty nesters. And so it was, you know, Cindy and myself who were out in eastern Montana this past fall. That picture, by the way, that everybody's talked about was taken by my daughter, you know, on her smartphone. So this is as Daines family tradition as it gets. And of course, John, there's a little story behind this, as you know.
I can't. It got you banned. I mean, you must have been blown away.
Censored. So it was 11 o'clock at night. I'm looking at my Twitter feed and suddenly I can't access my Twitter. And it said we were banned because my profile picture contained graphic and adult content. And I'm not making that.
No. You're like, who hacked it? And what's up there?
Exactly. So I thought, what in the world's going on? And so I reached out to the comms team. I said, my Twitter's been shut down. And you had some of these highbrow San Francisco elites decided to shut down my Twitter, completely censored. Well, they had no idea who they were messing with, because at this point we said, this is fantastic. We're going to have some fun with this. And so the next day I'm reaching out to some of my Senate colleagues. Senator Rounds quickly posted a picture of himself, his grandkids, some dead pheasants. Governor Gianforte of Montana has got a picture of his wife and a dead whitetail doe. I mean, this thing is going everywhere. All the hunting pictures you can imagine, daring Twitter to shut it down.
I love it. So what all do you hunt out there? It feels like in Montana, anything's game.
Josh, a better question is, what don't we hunt? Okay, so how much time do we have today? If it's got four legs, two legs, what do we hunt it? Legally, Josh, of course.
But we legally with the appropriate permitting and
correct.
Seasonal.
No, yeah. Always. I mean, I received my hunter safety training as a 12-year-old boy in Montana a long time ago. It was taught ethically and according to the law. But we hunt predators. We hunt wolves. We hunt mountain lions. We hunt bears. If you want to go to the more conventional species, we hunt whitetails, mule deer, elk, and antelope, or some people call them pronghorns. In Montana, we call them speed goats, affectionately. and we shorten that up with just goats. We do hunt mountain goats. We hunt bighorn sheep. I mean, it's a hunter's paradise. I think there's only one month of the year that there's not some hunting season that's basically open. I think it's July. Otherwise, you can hunt 11 of the 12 months.
I mean, there's probably no place in America, and we've done, at this point, like 300 interviews. There's probably no place that the entirety of the Ruthless Variety program wants to go to and spend time with the politicians of Montana. I mean, it is, we talked to Gianforte about it. Like, literally, we just want to get out there. What a terrific place.
Well, it is. And all I got to say, if you guys come out, just make sure you also leave. We're filling up with people right now. So I'm trying to
get. We vote the right way.
Listen, if your center right, we'll take you. We're looking for more refugees, less missionaries.
No, it's fair. I mean, the Californians. Geez, the Californians, right?
Well, the left coast. I mean, they're seeing what's going on in their cities and their states. And they're fleeing. They want freedom. And I've always said, I mean, I've been watching this migration. My great-great-grandma homesteaded north of Great Falls, Montana. She was a Norwegian immigrant. She was a widow that came out to Montana. I mean, tough as nails. But we've been watching this migration since I can have any memories of being in Montana. But what's different now is that it used to be you came purely for the quality of life. Of course. I mean, you look at the Big Sky Country. If you're an outdoorsman, you love Montana. It's heaven. Yeah. As long as you can stand a little snow in wintertime. But now they're also coming for the quality of leadership. You mentioned Gianforte. Greg Gianforte is a dear friend of mine, our new governor. It's not Governor Dutton, by the way. It's Governor Gianforte in Montana.
Just to make that clear.
Now, we still take people to the train station there occasionally. But anyway, you've got now, I mean, 8 out of 9 statewide elected officials are Republicans. When I first ran for the House back in 2012, there was one statewide elected Republican. It was all Democrats. Today, that's completely inverted. It is. It's a great story of what's happening, of Montana becoming a much redder state than it was.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's because of the leadership of folks like you. I'm surprised your Norwegian ancestors made it all the way through North Dakota, by the way. Usually, they snap them up by the time they get halfway to Bismarck.
Well, you just get tired. It's a long walk, Josh, if nothing else. But somebody said to my great-great-grandmother, the mosquitoes are smaller up there in Montana, and the skiing's a lot better. So they said, let's keep going. They did. And I'm so glad that, I mean, nothing against Nothing against North Dakota, but I'm glad I'm not from Minot. Just saying.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. So you mentioned 8 of the 9 are elected statewide Republicans. It's that 9th one that you've got an eye on, as well as the rest of the map, which looks, you know, look, we got some opportunities in 24, don't we?
It's a really good map. But as we remind everybody that looks at that map, Josh, don't fall in love with it, because these are going to be some brutal races. But just start from the top. We've got 3 red states that have Democrat senators up for reelection. That's Montana, it's West Virginia, it's Ohio. In each of those 3 states, they have moved significantly to a center-right direction in terms of the way they vote. They have become red states. Now, West Virginia has been red-red. Montana has gotten redder. Ohio has shifted more red. I mean, Ohio is not the Ohio it was back in the, you know, the Bush-Kerry days, when it used to be the swing state for the electoral college for Republican president. Not anymore. And I think what's happened is those blue collars in those states have rejected the green hallucination of the left. You know, the Democrats have changed. This is not the party of John F. Kennedy or Mike Mansfield, who was from Montana, the longest serving majority leader until Leader McConnell just surpassed that record. These are not your blue collar fighting for jobs, a Democrat party anymore. These are now true lefties. And I think these blue collar voters have rejected the green collar. Now, they're not ready to go to the next Lincoln Reagan dinner and start blowing up balloons for Republican Party events, but they aren't Democrats, and they're voting Republican. And I think we're really seeing that now in the last few elections.
Well, one of the things that we've been most impressed about is you hit the ground running. Clearly, we had a very disappointing 22, and I won't ask you to react to that, but we didn't do what we needed to do, and we had both subpar candidates, subpar campaigns, and just didn't execute where we needed to execute. But in the first month that you're behind the wheel there, I've had more of a parade of really quality people telling me that they've talked to you about running for Senate. And I got to tell you, it feels a little bit like a 2014 type atmosphere to me, where you had just a renaissance of really quality conservatives out there who want to be a part of the process and think they have to save the country.
Well, we're seeing that, Josh. You mentioned 2014. That was the year I ran for the U.S. Senate. It was a night that we picked up 9 seats. I mean, just an incredible flip. And you know, that was a midterm election for Barack Obama. And it was a profound moment, not knowing what was going to happen, because with a majority of senators, Republicans in 14, we didn't know what was going to happen in 16 when Trump's elected and we changed the courts, we passed tax cut, we did a lot of really great things. But we look at what's happening at this moment in history. We've got to find candidates that can win not just primary elections, but can win general elections. I think that's really key. And that's what we had back in 14. We had a quality group of candidates. And I've always said, Josh, that oftentimes elections are decided on filing day, even before they're decided on election day. Who is in the race? You get quality candidates that know how to lead, know how to message, know how to convince voters to vote for them. And you end up winning on election day.
Well, I've always said, like, one of the most important pieces of the job that you now hold is to have some guts, because it is never popular for a national Republican to weigh in on primaries, to discuss electability in terms of candidates. It's always easier to sit back, relax, and watch and see what happens and then say, you know, either we got a good hand of cards or we got a bad hand of cards. It's quite another to get involved early to make sure that those hand of cards look a lot better than they should. And that's one of the most admirable things that you guys have been up to, is going out and proactively recruiting candidates to make sure that we have our best shot in these states.
Look, we get one shot here in 24, Josh. I mean, we talked about the 3 red states that have Democrat senators in them. But if you peek over the hill to 2026 election cycle and 2028, just to kind of lengthen the horizon a bit, because right after we're done with the 24 election, we'll be gearing up for the 26 election. We're done with the 26, we'll be gearing up for the 28. So just for a moment, let's take a peek at 26 and 28 and ask ourselves, how many red states are out there in 26 that have a Democrat senator up for re-election? The answer is zero. So we have three in 24. We have zero in 26. Let's peek over to the next cycle in the 28. How many red states in 2028 have a Democrat senator up for re-election? The answer is zero. So if you think about 3-0-0, 3 in 24, 0 in 26, 0 in 28, we either deliver a majority in 24 or we are in the minority as a Republican Senate for the rest of the decade. And that has profound consequences.
Yeah, it's like a generational election in a lot of ways.
Well said, Josh. That it is a generational moment. And this is why my goal as NRC chairman is not to win a popularity contest. My goal is to win the majority for the United States Senate.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, that is very well said. And it's good that you understand that on the front end, because I mean, there's never been an easy way to do the hard thing. And doing the hard thing here is making sure we got electable candidates everywhere. Let's go through a couple of them. You mentioned West Virginia, Montana. You feel good about where we're headed?
Yeah, I mean, I start with West Virginia. West Virginia is a state that will vote for the Republican nominee for president by 40 points. I mean, Trump won it by 39. Last time he won it by 40 in 2016. Now, whoever our nominee is, we've got a tailwind there on the top of the ticket. I mean, that West Virginia is as red as they come. It's a toss between West Virginia and Wyoming, between, you know, our two reddest states in the nation. And so, you know, we've got Governor Justice is looking hard to get into that race. He just passed the biggest tax cut in West Virginia history. It's important to take a few victory laps around the state of West Virginia. But I've met with Governor Justice. He's very popular. Polling data shows that he beats Manchin by at least 10 points and maybe more. And what happened to Joe Manchin is that, you know, he basically kind of self-immolated back last year when he decided to cut that deal with Schumer on that so-called Inflation Reduction Act. He was the deciding vote. And he thought he was going to get this deal to help on permitting reform and other things. Turns out it just became another Trojan horse of more the New Green Deal kind of ideology. And boy, the folks back home just torched him on it. I mean, his face flipped upside down. Ballot test, he's now behind again. So he's going to have a really, really tough time if he runs again. And Governor Justice would be a formidable opponent. I think if he gets in, I just wonder if Manchin might decide he'd rather get on his own terms than in somebody else's terms.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I know you've been working hard in Montana in your backyard. I imagine you think Tester is pretty vulnerable here.
Well, what's happened in Montana, and yeah, I do know that state pretty well. you know, we had, Josh, you remember that race I had in 2020?
Yeah.
Steve Bullock, who was our very popular governor, was recruited by Chuck Schumer to get in the race right at the very end, last week before the filing, and in March of 2020. Up until that point, we had a pretty easy race. Bullock suddenly gets in, and now it's too close to call. That he'd never lost a race. He'd been our attorney general. When he ran for re-election as governor in 16, he won the state by 4 points against Greg Gianforte, by the way, when Trump won the state by 20. I mean, that is an amazing feat. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican, if you have that kind of crossover appeal, that's impressive. So when he got in, I remember I told my team, you know, they were all a little bit shaking in their boots the day he announced. And I said, look, I got two things to tell you. Number one, we're going to beat him. We're going to beat him. We're going to send him home. But number two, it's much sweeter to win a Division I championship than Division III. We now just became.
There you go. Hell
this
yeah.
This became a Division I race. I mean, this is, you know, you're playing on CBS for the chipper now, March Madness, you know? And so that's where it was. And sure enough, we fought that battle. It was $210 million. $210 million. That's the equivalent of spending $4 billion in Florida, by the way. If Marco just had his race, Rubio, in 2022, that'd be a $4 billion race in Florida when you normalize for population. $210 million. I mean, it was nuts. We got outspent by $50 million. And we came to election night. Came to election night, and you know, my wife and I were headed to, you know, I was in my Ford. I drive an F-150 and driving to the Hilton Garden Inn in Bozeman, Montana for our election watch party. And we had our war room all set up. And Cindy and I show up, and I had remarks. And one side of my coat pocket was like, "Thank you, Montana, for six more years." The other coat pocket here, other side of it, I had my resume. Like, what am I going to do in January? Because I didn't know. I went into that night saying, it ain't win, lose, or draw. It's win or lose. You know, I didn't know which one was going to be. And we ended up winning by 10 points, which shocked all of us. It was 55-45 against this guy who'd never lost an election. And so I just credit the team that was put together, the intensity we had. The campaign executed well. And I try to minimize saying stupid things, and we won.
Yeah. No, listen, you did a whale of a job, which is why you're more qualified than anybody else to lead that committee, in particular when Montana is up. Let's do a quick tour of the upper Midwest. You've got everything across the top, right? Pennsylvania, you mentioned Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
All of them Democratic held.
Right. Yeah. And just put a little exclamation point on Montana. Look, even since I ran in 20, we've seen more center-right net people move into Montana. These are these refugees are fleeing the heavy hand of blue government. And so our state, you know, John Tester beat Matt Rosendale in 2018 by 18,000 votes. 18,000 votes was the margin. We've seen at least 40 to maybe 50,000 more net Republican voters move into our state.
Wow.
That just doing the math, you know, I'm a chemical engineer by degree. I'm a numbers guy at heart. Just looking at the end of the day, elections are about, it's quantitative. It's about numbers. It's about who gets the most votes. So, you know, it just starts to look formidable. It's going to be a war, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for John Tester to win Montana with what's going on right now with the votes. Now go to Ohio. You know, Sherrod Brown's up. Similarly, Ohio is continuing to move further and further to the right in terms of the voting propensity. I like where we're at there. We've got the candidates right now that are looking at that race are all candidates that could win a general election at the moment. That's really refreshing.
Yes, and, totally refreshing.
There's going to be a pretty good primary there in Ohio, but I feel pretty good about no matter who emerges from that primary can beat Sherrod Brown, and the numbers just prove that. So I like where we're at in Ohio, but it's going to be another $200 million race in Ohio. Yeah. And then you go to the we call the presidential battlegrounds, which are also going to be Senate battlegrounds. There's five states. And if we keep going to the Midwest and the Northeast, it's Wisconsin. That's a razor thin kind of presidential state. We saw that in the 2020 election. That's Tammy Baldwin up there in Wisconsin, the Democrat. You go to Pennsylvania. Bob Casey has not yet announced his reelect. I assume he will, but you don't know. It's a little late right now on that. Dave McCormick's looking at that race, who just finished just behind Dr. Oz last time. And then you've got Michigan. It's an open seat. Senator Stabenow, the Democrat, has announced a retirement. So there's three interesting states. It'll be presidential battlegrounds. Now we'll go back out west. This is a little bit of a Groundhog Day, and at the risk of PTSD, we have Arizona and we have Nevada again.
I got to have PTSD on both of them, Chairman. Yeah. It's a real tough deal here.
I know. People are going to tune in the podcast and say, wait a minute, when did you cut this? Was this like the 22 election? But both states are up again. And we've got Kirsten Sinema running as an independent in Arizona. That creates a really interesting dynamic. You know, we find a Republican that can take the Republican lane here that's electable. You like your odds in a three-way there with Gallego over there. And, he's left of Xi Jinping. I mean, he's way out there. And so I like where we're at in Arizona. And then you go to Nevada. We'll see. You know, that's Jackie Rosen. Not a lot of folks have heard of her. And there's a lot of interest because where there's opportunity, there's interest. And so we've got a lot of candidates up there percolating now in Nevada as well.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, look, Arizona, you got your hands full, and I don't even know where to begin. If Republicans can do something different and actually, I've never seen a state where there's a greater chasm between a primary electorate and a general electorate than the Republicans in Arizona. And what the trickiest part there is to find somebody that is good with the primary electorate, that is capable of being nominated, that isn't immediately disqualified from a general electorate. And it's got to be just so frustrating But I mean, you're interviewing all kinds of people. You feel optimistic we can get there?
Well, you know, I do. There's some things, like you say, if you're dealt a hand, sometimes you work to try to adjust the hand you're dealt. And so we're going to be looking at that race. It's early still for Arizona. But I think there's a really important point to be made here about, you know, what happened in 22. To that point you just made, Josh, look, it was independents who decided the 22 election. There's all this talk about the base showing up. The base showed up. You look at it, we actually had an R+3 versus the Dems in terms of identified voters who showed up. So there was a red wave within the red jersey world. The problem was independent voters did not come our way, which is counter to history, which says when there's a Democrat in the White House in a midterm election, independent voters will go in the Republican direction. We saw that in 2010. In 2010, Obama's in the White House. What did independent voters do?
Yeah.
They went R+19. Republican. They went our way. In 2014, we talked about that cycle. When I ran for the Senate, picked up 9 seats. What did independent voters do? They went Republican by R+12. Then you come to 22. What did independent voters do in 22? They went D+2. I would argue, just in the simplest sense, that was the election. And that's why it wasn't just falling short in the Senate in expectations. But remember the House, we thought we'd have 20 or 30 more seats than we did. So it was systemic. I think that sums it up.
Yeah,
independent voters. Yeah.
No question about it. It's made worse by the fact that we won the argument, right? When you get everybody going to the polls and say inflation is their primary concern and Biden did it and they still voted Democrat. It tells you got a little campaign problem, right?
Well, Josh, you're a campaign pro. You know, the first thing in a campaign, if you're going out to defeat an incumbent, you got to make the case to fire the incumbent. I think we made the case to fire the incumbent. I mean, across the board, who wants 40-year inflation, $5 a gallon gas, high price of groceries, crime out of control, the border completely controlled by Mexican cartels? So I think we made the case to fire the incumbents. The problem was we didn't make the case to hire Republicans. I don't think we closed the deal in telling the American people what it is we were going to do about some of these problems. We talked about the problems, but we didn't connect it to a solution. I think I heard one pundit say the independent voters looked at this election and they looked at Democrats and said, I don't like that. And they pointed at the Democrats. And then they looked over at us. Yeah. And they said, but I don't want this. You know, I don't want these guys are done. And they just slightly stayed on the Democrat side of the ledger. And that was enough to lose the Senate majority, not get the Senate majority back. But, we're 49-51 right now. And then, of course, Kevin McCarthy's got a slim 5-vote majority in the House, but he should have had 25 or 30.
Yeah, I mean, look, it would be nice if we had candidates who knew what the United States Senate was and weren't a part of the Unabomber Appreciation Society. But that's where you got your work cut out for you. And I know you're doing a great job already. Listen, I got 3 big questions for you that everybody listens to here. All right. These are the big ones. And I'm actually fascinated to hear your answer to the first one. If you can plan your last meal on earth, Steve Daines, what would it be?
Elk tenderloin, medium rare.
There you go. Love that.
No, well, you should, and it's really good. I probably have a chocolate milkshake on the side. So I want to let I got the elk tenderloin, but with a chocolate shake, it'd be heaven. Maybe a glass of red wine too on the porch would be all right. Or probably a Moose Drool beer from Missoula, Montana would actually sum it up. So
yes. Do you do a little cracked pepper on that elk tenderloin?
No, you put salt on, you pop pepper. I got a little seasoning. There's certain marinades that you do. This is in the skiff now, Josh, in terms of secret recipes. It's like the recipe for Coke. So I'm not saying anymore, right?
No, I feel like that's fine. I'm not gonna go push too far. But if we head out there, I'm gonna need to taste test.
Well, we can do it, and we've literally been able to shoot some elk right off out of very close proximity to our home. All legal, of course, Josh. But I've chased enough elk to the top of mountains over my lifetime. Sometimes you need an easy one. We've done a few easy ones too.
If I could take the rifle out the living room window, that would really be terrific.
Well, we are not weapons restricted where I live, and so my weapon of choice is a 300 Win Mag, and with a 215 grain bullet on it. And let's just say it does a trick when you hit the boiler room.
I love it. All right. So if you were never in this line of work, you never got into politics at all, and you've got this big blue sky in the middle of your life that you can fill it with the benefit of retrospect with whatever it is that you're interested in, what do you think you'd do?
You know, I would be a hunting guide.
I love
doing that. No, I do. I've got the point of my life now. I've killed enough stuff, you know, to fill enough walls that I'm out of space. But you know, the joy of helping somebody else harvest maybe their first deer, their first elk. I've done that as a dad with my children. I mean, those moments you're laying side by side, prone in the eastern Montana behind some sagebrush, trying to get on some antelope, and watching your daughter do a gentle squeeze when you're literally like breathing through the shot, that moment, yeah. And to watch one shot that antelope tip over, and you stand up, you're high-fiving your sweet daughter. I'm just telling you, those are moments you'll never ever forget. But I love taking people out, introducing them to the sports, and I just love to guide. And I don't talk me out of my day job right now, Josh. I'm starting to rethink.
I'm sorry I asked. Honestly, no. Good.
I mean, I'm calling Cindy right now. I'm telling her. Josh told me I should find different work, so maybe I'll do it. I don't know.
No. Right, okay, we need you exactly where you are. But you know, like,
I'll come back tomorrow. All right.
Yeah, and maybe like you can entertain us or something.
I tell you what, you've got a low threshold for entertainment if that's the case. So,
all right. So, the final question, and this is a little esoteric. Our view is almost every successful person is motivated by one of two things: the thrill of victory or the agony of defeat. Not that anybody likes losing or hates winning, but it's what motivates you to keep going. And you know the whole backdrop to all of it. On that spectrum, Steve Daines, where do you find yourself?
Oh, good grief. Agony of defeat. I'll tell you, I hate losing.
Yeah.
And I think when you kind of combine it with politics, it's one thing to lose in sports. It hurts when you lose a major game. It hurts as a parent. I mean, we were sports parents through years of football, baseball, cheer dad, the whole thing. It hurts to watch your kids lose a game. It hurts to lose personally, but you get over that. Look, when you lose in politics, the consequences of that loss can extend for generations. That's the difference. And so I just hate losing. I mean, the agony of defeat even gets greater, I think, when you're in these political battles for the future of our country and the free world.
Oh, God, really well said. NRSC.org, Chairman Steve Daines. This is the guy who's going to make it happen, and he's doing a whale of a job. Senator, thank you for joining us. Let's stay in touch throughout the cycle.
All right. Thanks, guys. Glad to join you.
Thank you.
Man, he's just a terrific guy, and I really think we got to figure out a way to get out there. It sounds like paradise.
It sounds like paradise. And, you know, look, let me say this on a serious note. Everybody knows my critiques of the Rick Scott regime. I've made that publicly very clear. But it's not because I dislike Rick Scott. Like, I don't have anything against Rick Scott. All I know is I've done this for 20 years, and I've seen where it's failed and seen where it's succeeded. And when they went down the road where it was going to fail, I said so at the time, very, very vocally, and they failed.
Mm-hmm.
And like in 2010 and 2012, when Republicans were going to have a laissez-faire attitude about the recruits and the primaries in states that you needed to win to recapture a majority, we lost. You learn that lesson.
2014 was in my memory, the year that the NRSC made clear, hey, we're going to make sure we get candidates in the general who can win the damn thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that business model served for three straight cycles, winning more seats. And then all of a sudden it went away, right? It went away, four straight cycles, it was great, and it went away last cycle. And again, we returned to the 2010-2012 performance. It was basically the exact same situation. You lost the seats that you had to win in order to get the majority. So anyway,
now it seems like they're back.
Yep. Anyway, this guy gets it, and he's doing the right things, and I can't wait to work with all those people over there because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, great interview, great episode, absolute banger of an episode, if I may say so myself. Thank you so much to our listeners. Thank you so much for your 5-star reviews. And stay tuned, because there's going to be that special episode on Friday. So until next time, minions, keep the faith, hold the line, and own the libs. We'll see you on Friday. Stay ruthless.